Good afternoon, I'm Kathy Lewis. Protesters near the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation in North Dakota are celebrating a victory today as winter closes in. They've been protesting a pipeline they say endangers their water supply. The company building the pipeline says they've gotten approvals at every other level, and since all that remains is this small link, they should be allowed to proceed. The Standing Rock protest is a story of energy, Native people, social media, and politics, and we'll consider how we got here and where we're going after this news from NPR. Good afternoon, I'm Kathy Lewis, and we are so glad to have you with us today. If you relied on network news, you probably didn't know much about the controversy surrounding the Dakota Access Pipeline until the last couple of weeks. It's a project from a company called Energy Transfer Partners, or ETP. ETP got approval for the pipeline in July, and it's a pipeline that's designed to move a 500,000 barrels of crude oil every day to another pipeline in Illinois that will serve the Midwest and the Gulf Coast markets. It's been in the works for about 2 years. At issue is that final 1,100-foot link. In the way is the Standing Rock Sioux tribe, which says the pipeline will run under a reservoir that could contaminate the tribe's downstream water supply. ETP says it got the project approved 2 years ago, so the final link, it says, is just part of that approval. Besides, they say the delay has already cost the company $450 million. On Sunday, the Army Corps blocked the final permit. The tribes and their supporters celebrated just as winter is closing in. But many are concerned that that's not where the story will end. Another hearing is scheduled for Friday in Washington, and the pending change in presidential administrations could affect the outcome of this pipeline as well. And so that's our subject today at 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. We're glad to have in the studio with us today Vincent Schilling, who returns to our program. He's the arts and entertainment, sports and powwows editor and political contributor to Indian Country Today Media Network. Nice to have you back with us today, Vincent.
Thanks very
much. Appreciate it
very
much. Drew Lopenzina is a professor of early American and Native American literatures at Old Dominion University, and he has been to the site. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you very much.
On the line with us is Four Arrows, who's a faculty member in the School of Leadership Studies at the Fielding Graduate University. He has protested at Standing Rock on three occasions. Four Arrows, thank you for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
Well, my pleasure. Thanks for the invite.
You're most welcome. I wonder if we could just start with how this story became so much a part of the public consciousness. It occurs to me that I didn't hear anything about this, and I'm not saying I'm the arbiter of all this, but I really started hearing about this on social media with people posting and saying, why are the mainstream media not covering this story of what's going on? And people, you know, Facebook live streaming and the like, and sort of bringing this story to people's awareness through social media. I wonder what you observe about how this story came to our consciousness.
Well, as you know, the Indian people have been fighting for similar rights, the life of the water, the life of the land all over the world, are doing so now. And as you rightly point out, with little coverage in the social media or certainly in the network owned by the commercial organizations. I believe that the reason that this took off is twofold. One, it happened in the United States. Not that there have not been many violations of indigenous rights throughout the time and that continue, but something powerful as the oil company and the David and Goliath of a few of American Indian youth standing against it, I think had a certain resonance to where we are today in terms of an awakening. The second thing is related to that awakening, and that is that Indian people have always been ready to die for what they believe is important for future generations. And I think that all of us who are indigenous to this planet are beginning, especially the younger people, to recognize that we've gone on a path that is not good for the seventh generation. And I think that that awakening and, you know, the power of the prayer and the spiritual energies that were so important in this project, I think it's actually fostered and reinforced an awakening that's been dormant.
And you have been really struck by the collaboration between Indians and non-Indians. And by the way, on this terminology, I just want to make clear, I said this to Vincent and Drew before we came in. We may misstep in our terminology today, and if we do, you may consider that a naive offense, upon which we will be very delighted to be corrected. So I'm using...
Well, not at all.
Okay.
At all.
There
as
is
long
one
as,
term.
Yeah, with the respect, I mean, the American Indian movement has endorsed American Indian as a preference for pan-Indian, you know, conversations. But, you know, with the respect that everyone on this call has, that's all that counts.
Great. And so you've been very struck, though, by the collaboration between Indians and non-Indians around this and what you might call allies or supporters. Tell us who has joined this fight there.
It is striking. In almost all of the other cases, like I mentioned, around the world, it's indigenous people who are on the front lines. And it has been that way in our country. So it's a little unprecedented. Certainly the non-Indian people, you know, before the Cherokee Trail of Tears did come and join in, and they actually went to court for us. But those were just a few attorneys. It wasn't the populace like it is now. I really believe that this is about worldview. It's not about whether you have indigenous blood, as you know, as we define indigenous, or the UN defines it, or not. It's, you know, there's a lot of Indian people who are supporting oil and supporting Trump. I mean, the diversity is, you know, widespread on both sides of that, these kinds of issues. I think this is a worldview phenomenon. I believe that more and more people are realizing that the worldview of the dominant societies that's existed for over 5,000 years or so, that has separated us from nature, that is the problem. And that I think those who have struggled to hold on to the original worldview that guided us all for 99% of human history, especially the young people, are starting to realize, wait a minute, we are connected. We are one with the waters. We are one with the trees and the animals. And this anthropocentrism that has driven our education, our culture, our media, our movies, is, I think, starting to be challenged at a deep level. And this was the connection that I think took fire.
Interesting. And yet companies like Energy Transfer Partners have said, look, there is a growing demand for energy. This particular energy that we're talking about in this case is bound for the Gulf market and downstream in the Midwest. We're at this crossroads, aren't we? As sort of a modern approach that demands energy, and yet a respecting of these historic this historic reverence for the land. Do you see this particular issue, as we're looking at it through the lens of Standing Rock, do you see this as something that can be resolved by a rerouting of the pipeline, or is there a short-term fix that can be had? Or do you see this as more of a long-term, larger issue of which this situation is one example?
Well, those are great questions. But first, let me say that I do not believe that the research would show at all that the oil is needed, especially this. This is simply a greed phenomenon and a habit of money and power and short-term profit. There's been a lot of research by independent sources that show that this oil is completely unnecessary. It's an overkill on many, many, many levels. So that scholarship is out there. So I think not only for this particular pipeline and the back and field of oil, I think that this is true for the oil industry at large. In the 1940s, General Electric talked about how they were going to start promoting, electric, solar electric power. We are way overdue for this. So, so I first kind of reject that hypothesis that we need. Although we're all in the hypocrisy of using, our airplanes and our cars, I believe that we've got to overcome that belief to start with.
We're at 15. Go ahead.
We're
at 15, but thank you. I appreciate it. We're at 15 minutes past the hour. 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. What is of critical concern right at the moment is that there are still protesters at the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation, and the fact of the matter is that winter is closing in. It's really quite a significant, serious situation. Drew Lopenzina has been there. He's attended these protests. Nice to have you today. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having this discussion and hosting it.
You're welcome.
I'd like to get back to the question of social media for a second.
Sure.
So I thought that was a good way to open this. And this really was a social media phenomenon in many ways. This is where we were all encountering. It wasn't on the mainstream media. We saw this happen in the Middle East, I think, in Egypt, with how social media was used to get around oppressive forces and to get around a sort of negligent press. And so that's how we all encountered the story. But at the same time, it also was a phenomenon of people not satisfied with social media, saying that we need to get off of Facebook and we need to get off of Twitter and we need to go there. We need to go to this place and be a part of this. And I think it was really fascinating that so many people have gone there. So speaking to my own experience of going to Standing Rock, and I want to be mindful about how I characterize this because the situation has changed drastically since I went there. And that was only a couple of weeks ago. But I wanted to be a part of this. I have made certain commitments. I teach Native American literature at Old Dominion University, and my research and my teaching pedagogy, everything that I do is sort of mindful of trying to be an ally and trying to support Native people and get this history right somehow. And so this was an opportunity to go there and be a part of this. And when you get there, it's a really fascinating, I want to say, in some ways, it was a life-changing experience. I didn't go there for my own personal enrichment. I was actually quite nervous because I went there realizing I could get arrested. I was going to, actually put myself on the front line, and I was very aware of the motives for my going there and what I was about to do. But it's almost like a picturesque anachronism where you have teepees and dome tents and cars and trailers and Native people riding on horseback. And it's all bundled into this one place along the river. It when I got there, I was expecting 0 degree temperatures, but it was in the 50s and 60s, and it was just gorgeous. But it was very lovely to stand up on top of the hill and to look over this incredibly peaceful scene. The whole camp is a ceremony, and that's how it's treated, and that's how it's run. There's no alcohol in the camp. There's no guns or weapons. You don't take pictures inside the camps. It's not a place to take your cell phone out and take photos and whatnot. It is a ceremony, and that ceremony is constantly ongoing, and they ask that everybody come there with that kind of mindfulness. And so you can stand on the hilltop, like I say, just beyond the road on the camp, there's a high point of ground, and you can look on one side and see this beautiful, peaceful, cooperative community that has sprung up organically out of nothing. And then I shouldn't say out of nothing, out of the Standing Rock people who have been there and organized all of this. But then you turn around, and on the other side, you see the police blockade from that high point on the hill. And these are armored, militarized vehicles, armored cars, burnt-out trucks that are blocking the road that they've placed in that spot there on the bridge, and police cars just moving down the road. The oil company has their They've got large spotlights up on the ridge that are shining constantly on the camp. And as you're sleeping there, and I was there for 4 days and nights, and planes and drones and helicopters are buzzing over the camp at a low level. People were concerned when I was there that perhaps they were spraying chemicals, because this would be at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I don't believe that was true. But those rumors were out there. And of course, why else were they doing it but to intimidate and to make people feel unsettled in this constant state of surveillance?
Because they were spraying something.
Maybe so.
From video coverage, you can see them spraying something.
I can't speak to that. But the intimidation was there at the very least. This is being done to intimidate. And when I say it looks like a war zone, and it acts and feels like a war zone, because people are being, you know, there are concussion grenades. A woman has basically lost her arm. Another person has lost their sight. Rubber bullets being fired, tear gas.
The water cannon. Am I saying that correctly?
Water cannons in freezing cold temperatures. So I don't want to say I was fortunate. I was there for my own actions while I was there. But I missed that by 1 week. I kind of feel fortunate. I really feel for the people who were there experiencing that, and I would have been there with them had I been able to stay another week. But it's like a war zone, and it's frightening, and the use of force is so concerning. The irresponsible use of force by the state police and the people, the energy company, and the North Dakota government is really just frightening.
We should note that Morton County Commissioner Cody Schultz says they're spending more than $10 million in repeated confrontations with the protesters. He's very upset about this ruling from the Army Corps. He says it appears the federal government let the citizens of Morton County, who's described as militarized police forces, suffer for months while making a political decision that is likely to be overturned when the new administration takes office next month. And we should note, there was a great celebration on Sunday, Vincent Schilling, great celebration. Your correspondents have been reporting on it.
Yep.
And yet, pretty quickly, there, what you note and others have noted is the lights are still on.
Mm-hmm.
There's a new administration coming in a federal in a court hearing on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So it does not sound like the company, and it's been pretty clear, the company is saying we're going to keep pressing on.
Right, which was pretty much to be expected. You know, Energy Transfer Partners issued a statement immediately that says, well, we don't intend to stop what we're doing. And it's a maneuvering tactic, you know, but they, as of now, can't. You know,
do you expect that to change, though? There's a new administration coming into office. Do you expect that
you
to
know,
change?
You know, I really don't.
Obama's administration sort of has gotten the blame for this last minute because of the Army Corps' decision.
Right. Well, the Army Corps of Engineers, the Department of the Interior, Department of Justice all issued a statement the day of the decision where the judge said, well, we don't see a reason why they should have to stop initially. This was a little while ago. And the Obama administration has shown continued support for the water protectors, and that's something that they do say is they don't use the term protesters, they are protectors. And so as of now, what they are hopeful for is possibly, you know, if we hold on a little longer, maybe we can get some changes and go through. But you know, this is
time buying.
Yes. Yeah. Trying to buy some time.
Four Arrows is with us, and he's a faculty member at the School of Leadership Studies at Fielding Graduate University in California. I wonder, how do you think this is going to resolve itself, Four Arrows? Do you anticipate a change with do you anticipate a change?
Well, I agree with Bobby Kennedy Jr.'s assessment, who studied this really carefully as an attorney, who said that if they do a full environmental impact with public input, as is being touted by the Army Corps of Engineers, that there's no way on earth that it will pass. So the language about they're looking for a way to reroute it may be overconfident on the part of the people who are saying that, or maybe they're trying to placate DAPL. But if a legitimate environmental impact is taken on, I agree with Bobby Kennedy, because there are landslides that there's no way are not jeopardizing the crushing of the pipe in different places, etc. I do worry, of course, about the new administration and the policy and the claims that have already been made. Another issue that is out there is, and it's strictly a rumor as to whether the corporation is continuing to dig under right now. It's a rumor, but I have asked Wesley Clark and some of my brothers there to do what I had tried to do when the 20-mile restraint before by the U.S. Court of Appeals that said that they could not work within 20 miles. Our Veterans for Peace had gone on a operation and had discovered that they were actually working within 2 miles. And but the attorneys up at the top of the hill said the only way that could that is if we had videotape that had time and date on the actual video, so it had to be really
I want to thank you for joining us. I want to thank you for joining us today. I know you have to run, and unfortunately your phone line is breaking up, but I appreciate your being with us. Thank you so much. Four Arrows referred to this this opportunity where military veterans joined the elders. Wes Clark Jr., the son of the retired U.S. Army general and former Supreme Commander of NATO, Wesley Clark Sr., presidential candidate as well, was part of a group of veterans at Standing Rock that joined the tribal elders in a ceremony celebrating that easement denial from the Army Corps.
Many of us, me particularly, are from the units that have hurt you over the many years. We came, we fought you, we took your land, we signed treaties that we broke, we stole minerals from your sacred hills, we blasted the faces of our presidents onto your sacred mountain, and we took still more land, and then we took your children, and then we tried to take your language, and we tried to eliminate your language that God gave you and that the Creator gave you. We didn't respect you. We polluted your earth. We've hurt you in so many ways. And we've come to say that we are sorry. We are at your service, and we beg for your forgiveness.
That is a sound from a ceremony celebrating the easement denial at the Dakota Access Pipeline. You'll hear some of our callers and our listeners referring to that as DAPL. It's Dakota Access Pipeline Easement. We're at 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. And the gentleman who was speaking in that tape is the son of retired NATO Commander Wesley Clark Sr. Tim is on the line. He's been waiting for 21 minutes. Tim, hi. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it and appreciate your waiting.
Hey, hello.
Hi, go right ahead.
Okay. Just wanted to start this. Wanted to give a cogent argument for the pipeline with respect to Brother Four Arrows. All right. This is all information that I've gleaned from NPR over the past few days. First of all, let me see. The first thing I learned was that the Sioux Nation refused to participate in the planning of the pipeline. First of all. Second of all, I'm listening to Diane Rehm two days ago with her panel on, where they stressed that this pipeline is not crossing the reservation. This pipeline is not on the reservation. The next day, Steve Inskeep was on, and he was talking about how the pipeline was on the reservation. So I'm a little confused in that.
So are you supportive of the pipeline, Tim?
I would say, as a matter of national security, yes, I'm supporting the pipeline.
Okay, and I want to go back to your point about the NPR coverage. There was a report on Morning Edition in early November, which was focused on the demonstrators at the pipeline. And according to one of the North Dakota commissioners, he said that the Standing Rock Sioux sat out the state process. And of course, as you rightly note, that was one of the issues, and that was one of the points at issue, was the degree to which the tribe had been consulted about what was about to proceed on its reservation. And the head of the North Dakota, the chair of the commission that permitted the project suggests that the Standing Rock tribe did not participate in public hearings or at any point during the 13-month review process. She says, we notified the tribes, had a personal call go out to them, and had a hearing 45 minutes from Cannonball, which is where the protesters are. And she says they didn't attend, nor participate. At issue, though, and this is important, is that Renee Montaigne followed up and said, do you know for sure that the tribal chairman was notified of this in those 13 months? And the commissioner said his office was notified. Yes. So there is some conflict here around the nature of that notification. Tim, I thank you for the call. 29 minutes before the hour, Ryan's on the line from Portsmouth. Hi, Ryan. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thank you.
Hi.
First, I wanted to say I agree with everything Forero said, especially about the fact that oil's on its way out. But I would go even deeper. I would say this is another chapter in a long story of us, Americans of European descent, taking things away from and forcing things upon a native people who were so friendly to us when our ancestors first landed and had to endure so many years and even over centuries of abuse and victimization from the American government. It doesn't matter to me what they're fighting against or what people want to do across their land. You know, it starts and ends with Native Americans. They were here first. They've been victimized enough. You know, whatever they want or don't want should be taken with the highest regard. I have the deepest respect for those people.
Ryan, I thank you for the call. And you're getting at this scar that is still evident, and a point that was sort of, I think, tried to be resolved with tribal law and the relationship of tribal law to the federal government. I don't know which of you wants to respond to this, but give us a sense of the relationship of tribal law to federal law, and is tribal law enough to do what our caller suggests, which is to respect the rights of...
Well, tribal law is completely disrespected by federal law historically. You know, it is seen as a kind of a hurdle to jump as opposed to something to be adhered to. Mm. And the fact that it has or has not appeared on the reservation, this pipeline, the pipeline is actually going through traditionally held tribal lands. It's not logistically sitting right on the reservation, but these are lands lost in treaty. That were not supposed to be lost. Supposing to the 1851 Fort Laramie Treaty, these are still tribal lands. And they're digging up ancestral remains, and that has been noted by folks on the ground. So the fact that it's, whether it's not or not on the land, it is right along the border of Standing Rock, and it would affect the Missouri River, which would affect millions of people had something happened to this. You know, so I hear what people are saying. Well, is it on land? Is it not on tribal land? But the entire precedent of this was the fact and the court cases in D.C. between the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and Dakota Energy Partners Energy Transfer Partners has been the fact as the irrehensibly bad notification to the tribe of the fact that this is what they were trying to do. And these permits were granted based upon, you know, not...
So your contention is that that contact with the tribes was not fulsome.
This is not just my contention. This is the contention of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe's attorneys, you know, who are saying to the folks, saying, look, they were not properly notified. These environmental assessments were done without, you know, notifying the tribes, you know, so...
And certainly we have Indian tribes here in Virginia. There's been a lot of conversation around that. In fact, we just had that ceremony that they always do, the tribute ceremony around Thanksgiving. So there certainly are Indian tribes.
Well, and by the way, Pamunkey is now federally recognized.
Exactly so. And that was a big fight for a long, long time, right? But we don't, I don't think, have the sort of physical specter that we saw in that we have been seeing for these last couple of weeks, where you have this wide open land. And I think that somehow makes a difference in our understanding of it?
Well, maybe. I think this what's happening at Standing Rock right now resonates on a historical level in so many different ways. But let me just speak to the last caller who's, you know, that sympathy and that idea that Native people have been victimized. And I appreciate that. And I think that's, you know, it's a good reason to get involved and to say this is not right. But getting back to what Vincent's saying, there is an actual legality to this, right? Aside from just the victimization, there is a legality to this. Indigenous nations are sovereign places in the United States. They have it's a strange, and I mean, treaty law is so convoluted and disrespected.
We could
like
be here
Vincent
for three
saying,
years
right?
talking
so
about this, right?
I am not an expert on this, but I know something of the history of it, right? And so these are sovereign nations. They have a special relationship with the U.S. in terms of constitutionality because we made these treaties. And I mean, I think people don't understand. You know, let's get away from sympathy and just say, well, why did we make treaties with Native people? And the reason was, you know, the first treaties were made in the 1780s with the Mohawk and by George Washington because we were tired. We were tired of fighting a war with the British, and we had this whole Western Front that had not ceded yet. And rather than fight a war and have more bloodshed and loss and loss of treasure and blood, they said, we cried uncle, said, let's make a treaty with these sovereign nations. And the Constitution says that treaties are the supreme law of the land. So we recognize Native people as sovereign nations. In Cherokee versus the state of Georgia and Worcester versus the state of Georgia in the 1830s, we further sort of defined this relationship as the Cherokee were fighting to keep their traditional lands, and these cases went right to the Supreme Court. And what Justice Marshall determined in those cases was that Native nations are sovereign nations. That they were what he called domestic dependent nations, which is a strange liminal category. But what it boils down to is that states have no jurisdiction over Native nations. They rule themselves, they govern themselves, but the federal government can step in, and that's created a lot of strange issues.
Unless they do gaming, then their state compacts.
We can always
some of
bend
money.
These rules, right. And just like with the Cherokee, right? Because what the law ultimately said was that there was no legality to force the Cherokee to remove, but we did it anyways, right? And when I say we, I say white dominant culture, they did it anyways because the law means nothing if there's no will to enforce the law. And I think this is what often happens with these indigenous conflicts is the law is there. The legality is not that uncertain. The caller was saying how it's not on
the reservation. We celebrate the rule of law, right?
Yeah. Well, that's what we say. I feel like all of that's under threat right now. But we're seeing, I think, a beginning of how we may carry on and resist some of this stuff, but it happening at Standing Rock. It's not on the reservation where the pipeline's going through, but that is unceded territory from the 1851 Treaty of Laramie. The Lakota have never given away that land. And they have a right, a constitutional right, according to, I think it was 1980, the Lakota versus the United States, that says that if anything happens on that unceded treaty land, it first has to happen with the consultation of the tribe.
Drew LaPenzina is a professor of early American and Native American literatures at Old Dominion, and Vincent Schilling is the arts and entertainment, sports and powwows editor at Indian Country Today Media Network. I do want to let you know that right before, you'll recall, Four Arrows joined us earlier from Fielding Graduate University, and we sort of lost in a poor connection his last point, and so I want to make sure that we share that with you. He says we need to have someone verify if work is still ongoing there or not. Again, Sunday night, the Army Corps said no permits. DAPL, Dakota Access Pipeline, wants to drill down, he says, before the winter freeze is too hard. And as you've seen, if you've seen any of this video, it is intensively cold there right now. So Four Arrows has asked Wesley Clark, from whom you also heard in this broadcast, to charter an aircraft or otherwise do some video of the site to see what's happening there. Justin's on the line from Hampton. Hi, Justin. Thank you for holding for an extraordinary 23 minutes. Well done, my friend.
Yeah, no, thank you. Hi, Kathy. I am actually trying to call in. First thing I would like to touch base with is two callers ago, the gentleman called in talking about supporting per national security, the DAPL pipeline going through. And he also spoke about how NPR in the last few days has brought to the viewers' attention or listeners' attention that no one had showed up to any of the meetings, or they never protested before it got approved. I went on to the FERC website, which is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission website.
And what did you find?
I found that on the permit itself, it states, and don't quote me on this, but it's either December of 2011 or December of 2012 that when the commission requested for anyone to protest or if anybody had any problems with the in the actual permanent it said zero. Nobody protested. But that doesn't mean that the that
I hear you.
Didn't know about it. And I asked the lady at the commission in D.C. about how they would have to go about
Okay, so I hear what you're saying, Justin, and I don't want to get us too far down into the weeds here, but there is a conflict around whether the tribes knew or whether they didn't know and the degree to which they knew. So we will acknowledge that there is conflict there. You were concerned, though, primarily about delays in media coverage. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, for about a couple of months, myself and a few other activists here in the area, along with some activist groups like CCAN, Light Brigade,
and what were
group.
You trying to do?
We did solidarity demonstrations throughout the area. In Norfolk, Virginia Beach, we protested the security company out in Va Beach. I actually held a solidarity demonstration at Jamestown National Park back in September.
So what's your concern, Justin?
During those times, we reached out to several media organizations here in the area. No one showed up. Nobody cared. Now, all of a sudden, that there is another agenda behind this situation, and that agenda is the Trump card, basically.
Okay, so you think that the reason that people are covering this now is because of the election. Is that right?
Because of the election and the fact that
if Donald Trump
becomes president on the 21st, on the 22nd, he can reverse the Army Corps of Engineers.
Okay, so Justin, you've brought up an interesting point, and I'm going to just confess this let me explain to you that you said you got no interest from local media. I'm going to tell you what I asked our team when they wanted to do this story. Honestly, this is what I said. It's in North Dakota. Tell me how this is relevant to the people of Hampton Roads, because that's our coverage area.
Sure.
So, Justin, I would just offer that. That's probably the first question anybody asked. Mm-hmm. And I have a great team, and so they said, here's 500 reasons why we should do this, because of the social media angle, because of the administration angle, because of the whole relationship of tribal lands, and because of the relationships of those forms of governance. So now we're thinking this is a story we get now. Mm-hmm. We don't have those sort of large swaths of land as they do in North Dakota, but we do have similar situations in terms of relationships.
Well, a lot of people don't realize that King William County, the reservation, is the oldest reservation in the country, and it's right here in
Had conflicts around that, right?
Yes, there,
I remember years ago, the water reservoir.
And then you got the Pamunkey who have just got federal recognition. So is their land going to become, you know, land in trust or federally recognized land or sovereign land? And these types of things are happening here at a national level. National media is finally, I have been covering this since April. I have seen my, you know, we call him nephew, Natani Means, to get thrown to the ground, taken to jail, in a dog kennel, had numbers written on his arms. Dallas Goldtooth, who's Indigenous Environmental Network campaign on the ground organizer, you know, get just manhandled. He was my roommate in Washington, D.C. at the White House Tribal Nations Conference. I interviewed Chairman Archambault of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe at the White House Tribal Nations Conference and said, okay, I just saw the president say, you know, Standing Rock, what about NoDAPA? He says he's listening to us. The Obama administration has done so much for Indian country, and they have finally come forward to say, look, this is important enough to get national recognition. This is something that affects us all. This is
so you feel very connected to this.
Very
you're
connected
to this. You're a Mohawk descent, but this is...
I am federally enrolled member of the Mohawk, St. Regis Mohawk tribe, and I see what's happening. My Iroquois brothers and sisters are all out there. I have correspondents out there, and we've been watching this since April, going, where is the mainstream media? This is civil rights atrocities against a militarized force, against people who call themselves protectors that have absolutely strict guidelines that there is absolutely no drugs, absolutely no alcohol, absolutely no weapons, and this is peaceful water protection. And they have stuck to that. And the enforcement in the area has said things that are just ridiculous. And that's what gets reported on. Those are the releases, because that's who's covering. I would suggest check some of these, you know, guerrilla guys, and I say guerrilla like G-U-R-E,
right.
You know, and check out, like, Unicorn Riot has been providing some inside coverage that has been unbelievable. And to the caller before, Justin, I'm Vince Schilling on Twitter, SDH Schilling. You let me know about some of these events going on. If you're practicing some solidarity, I'll try to get some coverage out there to you.
Justin, thank you for the call. 15 minutes before there.
And thank you, Kathy, for doing this show.
I really appreciate the opportunity to sort of open a window on this, because this is how the conversations happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody will have an idea and somebody else will push back a little bit, and then that invites the person to really think it through, and then they come back. And so we're doing the show. This is, mm-hmm. it's a creative process.
No Dapple, NODAPL.
We thank you for doing it. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. No Dapple, Standing Rock, Dakota Access Pipeline for the past week has been trending worldwide on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. So,
this does affect us.
That's an interesting point about worldwide trending. Why do you think, Drew, it's striking such a chord around the world?
Okay, that could be so complicated. But for me, I think I mentioned earlier how this resonates historically.
Mm-hmm.
I think it resonates when you think, and I think people have a very imperfect understanding of these events. But going from Columbus's first landing to the removal of the Cherokee to Wounded Knee, all of these important events that people have this sort of vague understanding of, this seems to bring all of those historic things together in people's minds. I think most people, when they think about Native issues, it's like the caller before, there's a real sympathy there, right?
Yeah.
People sympathize. They have goodwill, but they also think about it being in the past. Like these, this is all just a done deal, right?
Yeah.
Isn't it all over? Didn't the Native people lose these battles and there's nothing to be done about it anymore? And all of a sudden, all these images appear of this ongoing thing. I think there's almost like a cognitive dissonance surrounding it, where the American public
exactly.
is like, how is this still happening?
Yeah. And you know what I found myself thinking when I was listening to that clip, and thanks to our producers for pulling that, the clip from Wesley Clark Jr., speaking to the chief and apologizing.
Yeah.
I thought that was a very powerful languaging he was using. But I found myself thinking about South Africa and the Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Bishop Desmond Tutu has been such a powerful figure in that, who said, you know, before you can have reconciliation, you have to tell the truth and you have to ask forgiveness and you have to acknowledge what you've done and then ask forgiveness. And it struck me when I was listening to that, that was really kind of a roadmap that he went down in that statement, because he said, this is what we've done to you. We are sorry. We are standing with you now and we ask forgiveness.
Yeah.
I love that you made that connection, right? I mean, it seems that must have been very conscious, but you know,
I don't know, man.
It seems like it was, but it was such a great gesture. I mean, there was a lot of anticipation about these 2,000 veterans showing up at the camp at any rate,
right.
and how that might change things, like in terms of how it just affect public influence and how will the police react to veterans being on the front line. And keep in mind that, you know, a lot of those veterans are Native people themselves, and Native people have fought in every war alongside the U.S. that the U.S. has ever been in, right? I mean, this is a real part of Native tradition.
And a lot of people don't realize Native Americans serve in the military at the highest ratio per capita of any minority.
Yeah, exactly.
And really?
If Native Americans, if other races had joined at the same ratio of Native Americans during World War II and drafted and enlisted, selective service and the draft would not have been necessary.
Wow.
A lot of people don't know that.
For Wesley Clark Jr. to come to the tribe and to come with that sort of humility, right, to be humble and to make that gesture, I thought that was a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really all I can say about it. I think it was a beautiful thing. I think it was a powerful thing, and it was a meaningful thing. And this is, I mean, the Lakota Nation has approached the whole thing this way, peacefully and with humility. Like, the whole idea of being water protectors. We're not fighting. We're doing this for everybody. We're in this for there's a grand vision behind this, and it's a peaceful vision, and peace and reconciliation.
I think that's a great thing to say, this grand vision. You know, when I first started at Indian Country Today, one of my executive editors said to me, he says, "Vincent, you know, I've always had it in my heart for the victories of held by the righteous underdog." And I think that our society now and our world now is seeing that the Native culture, which has so long been oppressed, so long been treated horribly, has won a victory. You know, and I think the rest of this world is enjoying this sense of a victory by the righteous underdog. You know, we are fighting something so simple as water. And what really struck me, Kathy, was here they are standing up in Standing Rock, protecting water, being attacked with water cannons.
Yeah.
Wow.
It really struck me. I was like, here they are fighting against what's being thrown at them literally right now. And this is in frigid freezing temperatures. And I'm like, I said, wow. I don't know if they understand the strength of water is going into these native people. And they're going, I'm feeling the strength of water, brother. You're not going to stop me. This is even more. So that's just something that really resonated with me really, really strongly.
The irony of it, it was what impacted me. But the way you're framing it is really, I think, really powerful.
Yeah, and
too,
you know what I didn't say? I do want to say to you, thank you for being there. Thank you for serving as an ally to Native people and being there. I really mean that sincerely. That means everything. And Native people have felt for the first time, I can't say the first time, but many Native people have felt for the first time, there is some really incredibly gracious and overwhelming solidarity. I mean, we've had Reverend Jesse Jackson there, Mark Ruffalo, the Hulk, Leonardo DiCaprio, Shailene Woodley of the Divergent series,
Susan Sarandon.
Neil Young was there on his 71st birthday.
I was sitting by my campfire. Neil Young, all of a sudden, I look up, he's playing guitar.
Get out of
right
you were
in
the,
front of
you
me.
Were there.
Right in front of me. It was just unbelievable.
It's not an everyday thing.
He played on his 71st birthday. He said, this is a great birthday present to be here at Standing Rock.
9 minutes before the hour, and we're wondering how this Standing Rock story resonates for you. Are you like me? Did you just say, hey, doesn't have to do with Hampton Roads? Not really that concerned. Clearly, that was a minority position, which has now since been enlightened, which is why we're doing the show. Mm-hmm. But we'd love to hear from you. And we should also note that on our Facebook page, John writes that he has similar concerns around the Atlantic Coast Pipeline, mm-hmm. even though that is not necessarily, I'm making that assumption. Mm-hmm. He says anytime commercial interests conflict with the interests of the greater good, we have to be concerned. Abby's on the line from Virginia Beach. Yeah. Hi, Abby, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just, that so much resonated with me, Standing Rock. I did a final paper on nonviolence like the week before, and I just thought how historical it was for millennials and our generation, or, you know, my generation, uh-huh. to witness nonviolence in action and succeed. I teach 11th graders, and they said, I said, why do you think they would hurt innocent people? Because they didn't respect them. And when the veterans came in, it was like they finally saw them, everybody as equals. And I said, if someone won't stand up for the innocent, if the innocent can't stand up for themselves, then it takes someone to make them equal with the opponent. Oh, and it was just beautiful. It was beautiful.
That's neat.
So I know there's a lot of work to be done, but we're...
Yes, Abby, there is.
Abby, thank you for the call. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
This whole aspect of nonviolence is very powerful as well. And it's the imagery, I think, has been very powerful coming out of Standing mm-hmm. Rock. And again, we go back to this social media point. If this had happened before social media and the mainstream media had not covered it, mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I don't know whether it would have
ever been
covered.
It's unbelievable. Well, in Native culture, it is very well known between many, many tribes that as a community force, everyone has their own part in this community. Uh-huh. And a lot of people say, you know, there's the sense of the Black Snake Prophecy. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Black Snake Prophecy, which was something from...
I didn't figure out why Standing Rock was relevant to Hampton Roads, so I do not know anything about
generations
the Black Snake.
And generations ago, there was a Lakota prophecy where the Black Snake would traverse through this country, which was Turtle Island. The Turtle Island is the North America.
Okay.
And this Black Snake would traverse through our Turtle Island and poison it all unless... Native tribes came together.
Wow.
Now, so essentially this Dakota, this prophecy has been halted now because the tribes have come together. And what a lot of people think is like, well, I didn't go, I wasn't part. But a community is a community. And now we have a virtual community. Our children may have been ripped out of their homes and taken to boarding schools to be taught English. But this English language has brought us all as tribes together. Oh. So we as a community are not just there at Standing Rock, but we as a community are a worldwide and indigenous national community. So as much as, you know, people are there, no DAPL is trending. Standing Rock was trending. You know, Dakota Access Pipeline was trending. So everyone played a part. You know, I had one tweet that I said Standing Rock should be, you know, Standing Rock Water Protector should be Time Magazine's Person of the Year. And it got retweeted, you know, several thousand times. And then, of course, just found out this morning.
It went the other way.
It's Donald Trump. But, you know, I mean, it's the community has been coming together in force. And everyone is part of this community. So Hampton Roads, there has been a ton of people that I know personally here in Hampton Roads who have been an ally to this movement.
Yeah.
You know, so it does include us all.
Yeah. Well, and see, I wish I'd have known this.
Look at you becoming part of this.
I know, but I wish I'd have known that when they brought this story up, because I'd have been very cool and said, well, of course, because X, Y, and Z. Instead, I said, wait a minute, hold up. It doesn't have to do with Eastern Virginia. What's the deal here?
You know, but do you see what you did, though?
Yeah.
You asked. You asked a question, and you said, why is this important? And they told you, and
they
listened.
Told us.
That is a huge deal. That doesn't often happen in Indian country.
Oh.
Whenever oppressive force is being used against peaceful protesters, that affects everybody, right? I mean, that affects everybody here, and I think we're all sort of conscious.
Yes,
I mean,
it does.
We're conscious of the fact that we're moving into a strange place in our nation right now. And I think part of why this is also resonating is I think people, I think a great many people in America right now are trying to figure out how they're going to up their commitment to social movements, to grassroots movements, to applying pressure to what seems like, I think what is being perceived as the threat of oppressive force. I think we've seen enough of what the Trump administration, I know not everybody's going to agree with this, right? But I think we've seen enough of what they've said and some of the people they're bringing into their cabinet that people are worried and concerned. And I think, like Vincent said, this looks like a victory, right? A victory from the most unlikeliest corner. And I mentioned, this is a blueprint on how to move forward. People, I can't stress this enough. It's a matter of like, sure, it starts on social media, but it's about getting away from social media and people coming together, because you have to be able to put your body on the line. You have to be present for change to actually take place. And I think that's what happened at Standing Rock is like, it's just people, thousands of people from all over said, I want to be present.
And everyone that could go, you know, and I do want to note that there's some people who are housebound or disabled who wanted to be there so badly. And as much as your point is incredibly important and you're absolutely right, I also want to recognize those who couldn't get there. And
but I'll tell you, that is
outside.
The other great thing about social media is that, you know, the fact of the matter is people could experience it. And I just cannot imagine all the ways in which that is changing things for us all. Vincent, it's good to see you again.
Yes,
Vincent Schilling.
Thanks.
Thank you for
being
here. Where can people connect with you if they're interested in more information or following
Vince
you?
Vince Schilling, S-C-H-I-L-L-I-N-G, Vince Schilling on Twitter.
On Twitter. Okay. Mm-hmm. And Drew Lopenzino, thank you so much. Lopenzino, thank you so much for being with us. Really
thank you
appreciate
for inviting
it.
Me.
And Drew Lopenzino is a professor of early American and Native American literatures at Old Dominion University. And I should note as well, you are not yourself Native American. So I've made that assumption.
As long as you didn't stop with you are not yourself, because I didn't know where you were going with that.
Yes, and thanks for being an ally. Both of you are allies in this movement, thanks to both of you.
Well, thank you all for being with us, and we'll have all that information on our Facebook page as well. Up next here on 89.5, it is Radiolab. Then coming up tonight on WHRO TV 15, at 8 o'clock, stand by, it's Love in the Animal Kingdom. I can't even say any more about that. I have 9 seconds left. I cannot go any further with that. You're going to have to tune in at 8 o'clock for nature. We'll see you tomorrow.